Welcome to this portion of Focal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb, and right now our guest is George Barna, the George Barna, and he has written a new book called The Day Christians Changed America, How Christian Voters Put Trump in the White House and Redirected America's Future. Mr. Barna, it's a great privilege to have you on. I've read your stuff through the years, and I'm honored that you would come on this program.
Well, I appreciate you asking me to be on, Jerry. Thank you very much.
Sure. And is there a website for the book itself? Before we get into the meat.
You can go to culturefaith.com. That's actually for our organization that does all the research, and you'll find it there.
Okay. Sure. Now, in the book, you use this phrase sometimes, sage cons, spiritually active, engaged conservatives. What does that mean, and how did they make a difference in the 2016 election?
Yeah, it's actually spiritually active, governance-engaged conservatives. And that's a group of people that represent about 10% of the population in America. They're important because when the media start talking about conservative evangelicals and right-wing religious people and all of this, they really, by and large, lump a whole bunch of people into a category they don't understand. Sage cons are a group of people that, through the research we've identified, who have pretty much a unified way of thinking and acting politically. These are people who are devout Christians. They read their Bible daily. They go to church regularly. They're involved in personal spiritual pursuits. They have a deep personal connection with Christ. And because of their faith, they believe that the Bible teaches that if you're going to be a Christian, you need to be involved in every aspect of life. And that includes government, politics, all of that. And so this group of people really pays attention to what's going on in terms of elections and public policy and the kinds of government decisions that are being made. They're conservative in their ideology as well as their theology. And then we also know that there are individuals who care about America. They're patriots. They believe that America is a nation that God has blessed tremendously, and that gives us a responsibility in terms of how we respond both to him and to other people and the rest of the world. That particular group was, I believe, one of the most critical segments in the election. We know that over the last 8 elections, there is no Republican or conservative presidential candidate who has won the presidency without winning at least 70% of the sage con vote. Mm-hmm. So they become a group that you can't win if they're the only group you win over, but you cannot win unless you win them over in pretty significant numbers.
Mm. That's a very interesting. By the way, I was just at a conference last week for pastors, and they were quoting you, and they were talking about some research you had done maybe about 15 years ago, and the gist of it was that only about 9% of American Christians apparently have a biblical worldview. I'm wondering, you're saying 9% have a biblical worldview, and then you're saying about 10% of the, how many of those people are sage con people, if you will, of those 9%?
Yeah, actually, we've updated that worldview research earlier this year. We did a study on that. We found that currently 10% of all American adults have a biblical worldview, but among sage cons, roughly 9 out of 10 of them have a biblical worldview. So it's almost a match between those two things. It's hard to be really committed to the scriptures, have a deep relationship with Christ, want to live your faith out as faithfully as you possibly can, bring other people to faith, do all of those things and not ultimately wind up developing a biblical worldview. So that's why you see that kind of coincidence between the two groups.
Trump is obviously an unlikely choice for sage cons, or he would appear to be that, say 2 years ago. Yeah. If you and I were to talk about this 2 years ago, who would have thought?
Absolutely. Yeah, that's an understatement. I mean, when he announced, about 3 or 4 months after he announced his candidacy, only 9% of sage cons said that he was the candidate that they would support. And of course, there were a slate of 17 Republican candidates. You had about 5 Democratic candidates. You had a bunch of independent and third-party candidates. So there were lots of options on the table, and sage cons didn't really see Mr. Trump as one of them. And the reason for that is because the driving force in making a voting decision for StageCons is the character of a candidate. And as they looked at what they knew about Mr. Trump's character,
sure,
they said, well, he really isn't what we're looking for. But, you know, here's the interesting thing, Jerry. By Election Day, his support among StageCons went from 9% back in June and July of 2015. He took 93% of the votes among StageCons, and that's with 91% of them showing up to vote. And to put that in context, realize that only about 57 or 58% of the rest of America, other than StageCons, bothered to show up to vote. So they showed up in massive numbers, and they almost uniformly supported him. Not because of his character, but because when they looked at the two choices, they said, you know what, we don't like either one of these candidates, but one of them is going to wind up being elected. And so they looked at the key issues that they were focused on, and those issues led them to believe Donald Trump is going to be our better bet. He's not our ideal candidate, but he's the best that we can have in this election.
The election results of 2016 surprised and shocked virtually everybody, even those that were, say, rooting for Trump. Is perhaps the surprise factor that the mainstream media and the mainstream of the political leadership had essentially written off the conservative element of the church?
That's a major part of it. Another major part of it was that the polls were actually pretty misleading from a lot of the major media polls. Because what they were doing was they were gauging his support across the country with all people. And the reality is that's not how we elect a president. We elect a president on a state-by-state basis, and then we look at the electoral college votes that each state has, and you have to win a majority of the electoral college votes. So it really depends which states you win. And that's why, in some ways, Mr. Trump had a stronger strategy and a stronger campaign than Mrs. Clinton. She spent a lot more money. She had a lot more employees. They had a lot more people on the ground. But Mr. Trump only went and campaigned in certain states that were what we would consider to be the swing states. And so he found favor with people in places where we didn't expect him to win, yeah, like Wisconsin or Michigan, Florida, another key swing state, Pennsylvania. You know, those were all critical wins in those states for him, where when you looked at the polls in those states, it was too close to call. When you looked at the history of those states, they traditionally voted with the Democratic candidate. So most of us were of the belief that, you know what, if things go the way we think they might, the polls are too close for us really to call those particular states. We think probably they'll go the way they historically have. They'll go with the Democrat. They didn't in this case. And so there was a lot of surprise with a lot of people come Election Day.
I was in a situation where I was speaking at our church, and our senior pastor was very concerned that I not get political or whatever, over-political or whatever, in terms of what I was to be able to hand out in terms of comparing the candidates and so forth. But I said, look, what if I just show this comparison between the political platform of the major, you know, the Democratic Party and the political platform of the Republican Party on some of these issues that are of importance to us as Christians? He said, yeah, I can't argue with that. You show that. And so I was able to distribute that. And you point out that the party platform was a huge factor, wasn't it, in this recent election?
That was a huge factor. And the other thing that corresponded with that was the fact that churches and Christians, more than any other groups in the country, rely upon voter guides. So when you hand out voter guides that compare the candidates vis-a-vis their stands on issues, the kinds of votes that they've made in legislative bodies that they've been part of, all of those kinds of things, so you get a real sense of what does each candidate stand for, that's a big deal to Christians. They really pay attention to that. They don't vote personality as much as they do issues. But the other fascinating thing about this election was that some of the issues that most Christian leaders in the country thought would or should be the big issues turned out not to be to Christian voters. The prime example being religious liberty, religious freedom, religious persecution, things related to our faith. So there was a lot of emphasis early on in the campaign in Christian circles about those issues. But what we found out through the research is that they didn't really care about that so much. And yet the two issues that really rose to the top of the pack
abortion.
Were the Supreme Court nominations and abortion.
Yeah.
And so when you began to look at the two primary candidates, Mrs. Clinton and Mr. Trump, on those issues, it made it a much more clear choice for many Christians.
How about same-sex marriage?
You know, it's interesting these days, most Americans believe that in many ways that's a decided issue. And so there's going to have to be new strategy that's developed in order to turn things around. But one of those strategies has to do with who's going to be on the Supreme Court and mm-hmm. what kind of cases can be brought before the court.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because perhaps the court may undo some of what they did in the Obergefell decision. Let me ask you this. As you did the research for, you know, what actually happened, were you surprised by anything? Was there anything that startled you or just kind of made you think, wow, this is, I didn't know this?
Well, one of the things that really surprised me, and I don't think most people realize it yet, is that Christians were so turned off, SageCons in particular, were so turned off by the handling of the election by the mainstream media that they literally began to develop their own personalized media networks. So instead of just automatically tuning in to ABC, CBS, NBC, CNN, Fox, they were very disgruntled with the kind of reporting that they were getting. Our surveys consistently show that Christians were saying, they're lying to me, they're not telling me the truth, they're not showing me things in context, they're not reporting on events that are important to be reported upon, they're putting their spin on things. They were so upset about that. They said, I'm just not going to go there anymore. It's stupid of me as a believer of Christ. You know, we believe that there is truth, and so I need to find truth. And if I can't find it there, I shouldn't continue to expose myself to what I know of fabrications and lies and distortions. And so they began putting together a personalized network of radio programs, online publications, physical publications, different magazines. They began looking for different kinds of television programs on kind of offbeat networks where they felt they might get the truth. Interestingly, for instance, BBC News became much more popular with Christians during that last election than it had ever been, as far as I can tell. And it's because they thought the Brits really weren't trying to put a spin on things as much as our own news journalists were. So that was a really interesting outgrowth of what happened, and much of that has stayed in place now, where the conservative Christians across the country are paying attention to different media outlets than they ever have before.
It's interesting. In one sense, you could say 2016 election is the time when Donald Trump discovered the evangelicals in this country. I understand that you identify a meeting that he had with about 1,000 or so conservative Christian leaders in New York City last summer, just the summer of 2016, that was a turning point for Donald Trump?
It really was. Right in June, there was a meeting that was put together, and the idea was, well, let's have each of the major party candidates meet with evangelical or Christian or conservative Christian leaders who are not yet decided, because this election is too important. And what we were hearing from so many significant Christian leaders across the country is, you know, we don't like either candidate, so we're going to sit this election out. Stupid. That's how you lose everything,
right?
By extracting yourself from the process. So the idea was, all right, let's have an event with each of the candidates, no media, invitation only, closed doors, and let's just talk honestly with each other. Mr. Trump was invited. He accepted the invitation. He came. Mrs. Clinton was invited. It would have been a separate meeting. We didn't want them, you know, spending their time yelling at each other. Mm-hmm. We'd already seen the televised debates. What we wanted was each of them to just have time with Christian leaders. She refused to do it. Mm-hmm. And so Mr. Trump had this event in New York City that was put on. He was invited. He showed up. He said, I'll give you guys 45 minutes. He came into the event, came on stage. His arms were wrapped around himself, kind of like he was Ed Sullivan. You know, and he had the little pout on his face that he had. It was like he was steeling himself for the barrage that he was expecting to get from Christian leaders because of what the media had taught him evangelical leaders were like. Instead, what he met was a group not of 200 people, which was the original estimate of how many might show up, but there were 1,000 of them in the room. They were very respectful. It was quiet while he spoke. There was no booing, no clapping, no hissing. It's, let's hear the man out. Let's see what he's got to say. Mike Huckabee acted as the MC. He asked him about 20 minutes worth of questions, and then it was opened up to questions from the floor. And there were people like Tony Perkins and Dr. Dobson, Samuel Rodriguez, other people who had the opportunity to ask Mr. Trump questions that Christians across the country were wondering about. And he answered them, it seemed, as honestly and forthrightly as he could, sometimes admitting that he didn't know enough about it, and that's why he was working with people like Ben Carson and Mike Huckabee to try to better understand those kinds of issues and what mattered to Christians. Before he came to the event, he'd spent an hour being prayed for by Christian leaders, big-name Christian leaders, who were very concerned about the future of the country. And it really was a remarkable thing. After that event, those leaders didn't immediately say, yeah, we're in Trump's camp. But they went back, they thought about it, they prayed about it, they did some more study on the issues and on the candidates. And within about a month, 4 to 6 weeks, what we noticed was that the vast majority of the people that had been at that meeting were then publicly telling their constituencies, you need to take Donald Trump seriously. When we look at the options that we've got, he may be our best option, but you've got to do your homework, you've got to pray about this, and you've got to vote. It's going to matter this time around. It's going to be very close. You need to get out there and vote, and you need to vote the way where you'd be willing to stand before the Lord and say, I really sought your guidance in this and biblical wisdom in this, and that's why I voted the way I did.
Wow. George Barna, again, the name of his new book is The Day Christians Changed America, How Christian Voters Put Trump in the White House and Redirected America's Future. Culturefaith.com for more information. Mr. Barna, thanks so much for being with us. All the best.
Jerry, thank you.
Okay, God bless. Bye-bye.